Hello, everyone. My name is Quinn Heck. I'm the Vice President of Atheists, Humanists, and Agnostics at University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we'd like to thank you all again for coming and just welcome you here, and hopefully you're having a great time. Our next speaker is the author of a very popular blog, Feringula. I'm sure you've all heard of it, and if you haven't, you're kind of out of place. he is also an associate professor at the University of Minnesota Morris, studying evolutionary developmental biology, and is, as you might know, he has a slight interest in cephalopods. And please welcome me in joining, please join me in welcoming PZ Myers.
Okay, you know, actors have this knowledge that you shouldn't share a scene with a chimpanzee, a small dog, or a baby. You gotta add JT to that list. Oh, I feel like taking a nap now, and you will too, you know, after that. Anyway, so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to talk about some of the same things that JT talked about. Amazing. Only with a more narrow focus, because I'm going to talk specifically about science and this whole problem of people conflating religion and science and saying religion is compatible with science. And I'm going to come right out and be extremely arrogant and say, no, they're not. Religion and science are totally incompatible, and if you're trying to mingle the two, you are doing it all wrong. And why is that? We are going to... So where was I? Okay, science and religion, they're incompatible. And why is that? That's because science is godless. Full stop. There is nothing to do with God anywhere in science. If you've got evidence for a God, show it to me. Otherwise, forget it. It doesn't belong in science. And I can tell you a lot of people that agree with me and some people who disagree with me, which I'll talk about in a moment. But let's talk about what science is and why we think it's godless. So here's Sean Carroll. And he's got a simple answer for this. The reason why science and religion are actually incompatible is that in the real world, they reach incompatible conclusions. In other words, religion is wrong. That should refute it right there, okay? It gives you the wrong answers every time. If you were doing math problems and every time you do the math problem, you come up with the wrong answer, you would say, oh, I must be doing something wrong. You wouldn't be saying, oh, the math problem needs to be adjusted to fit my answer. But that's what religion does. They're also incompatible because, as Vic Stenger says, they're unequivocally opposed epistemologies. They have different ways of understanding how they know what they know. They make assumptions, of course, but the assumptions that science makes are constantly tested against the real world. We have a standard against which we can measure our estimations of truth. Religion does not have such a standard. Religion may have its holy books, and you'll find that literal fundamentalists do treat their holy books as real as we treat the real world. But, of course, then what you discover is those holy books are full of inconsistencies and contradictions and should be rejected. The key thing is that you cannot be religious and scientific at the same time in a coherent way. Yes, there are people who are religious scientists. They don't do it simultaneously. They have to shut down the prayer module when they go into the lab and do experiments, because prayers do not contribute to their research. Now, what you'll often hear people tell you when you say these things, they're incompatible. Well, they say, well, the answer is we have to find a compromise to make everybody happy, right? That's the way you resolve things in politics, is you try to find something where you can meet in the middle. And I have my own quote on that. And that's simply that, you know, if you're trying to meet in the middle, if you're trying to compromise, all that means is that you're halfway to crazy town. So what we should be doing is we should be doing our best to approach the correct answer, the right answer, the answer best supported by the evidence, and screw the other stuff. When you find out something is wrong, you leave it behind and move on to the better answer. And religion is wrong, we ought to be moving on to the better answer. Now, the other problem, of course, is not only is science godless, but religion is nonsense. It really is. It does give you the wrong answers. As I was just telling you, that's one of our big problems, is religion gives you the wrong answers. Yet when you ask people these questions, you discover all kinds of wacky stuff. For instance, you've probably heard that statistic that something like 93% of the National Academies of Scientists, the best, most respected, most highly esteemed scientists in the country, are atheists. They don't believe in a god. Only a small fraction do. When you look at the American public as a whole, what you find is that roughly half of the American public believes in garbage. They believe the Earth is 6,000 years old. They believe that God created us exactly as we are. This kind of stuff. This is not true. But then when you go to the other extreme, when you look at pastors, this is the result of a survey by Lifeways of a number of American pastors, what you find is that they believe this stuff to an even greater extreme. That roughly 80% of them believe that Adam and Eve were real, literal people walking the earth at some point in our history. Any of you who know population genetics know that this is totally false. It's been disproven, literally disproven. By looking at the genetics of human populations today, we know that we never went through a population bottleneck of two people. We would be extinct if that happened. So we know that didn't happen, but 80% of the pastors believe this. You also look at this graph and you see that like 50% of the pastors argue that yes, the earth is less than 6,000 years old. The other 50%, well, the other 30 or 40%, believe in other nonsense. The Christian religious explanations are all over the place. There are all kinds of weird explanations for the age of the earth. There's not just people who believe the earth is 6,000 years old. There are people who accept the day-age theory. There are people who accept the gap theory, all these different religious theories. Those are equally bogus, just as bad as the literal six-day creation story. So this is kind of misleading when it says only 50%, larger percent believe in total nonsense. And of course, as you look at these graphs, you know there's a few nice numbers up there. There's always a few people who are religious Christian pastors who actually believe in good old common sense science. I suspect that they're all members of the Clergy Project. And they're really closet atheists. That's the only explanation for this, because religion really makes you insist on believing in some really strange things. Now, here's the other problem. Is you've got scientists out there who say that they are believers. They're Christian believers, for instance. And they are also respected scientists. And they'll say, this is fine. I have no problem with this. These are compatible in my head. I'm happy with these beliefs. The thing is, though, that when you actually address these people, when you actually talk to them and discover what they really believe, what you discover is that, yes, they believe in the periodic table of the elements. They believe in evolution. They believe in the scientific method. And then they also believe in Buddy Jesus, which is crazy. You know, now, I know this is an audience that's full of atheists, and we're all rarely distant from this stuff. So it's easy for us to see, but think about it. These are people who believe that God turned into a person and that person was then killed to save us from God's mistake. Oh, wait, no, not God, our mistake. God created us and then we made him. Yeah, it's a whole long, convoluted chain of bizarre logic. They believe this. How can you be a scientist and believe in this nonsense? It doesn't work. But at the same time, what you often find is if you pin them down, as JT suggested, pin them down, what you often find in these people is a retreat, a rapid backing away from this. You will read this all over the place. You'll say, oh, no. You see, God is love. Love that permeates the entire universe, okay? Spread through everywhere. God is in outer space because love is in outer space. And they tell you other stuff like this. Or they tell you something like, God is the ground state of all being, which sounds very pompous, but it's impressive, whatever it means. Or they'll tell you that God is a force that penetrates us and binds the universe together. You know, you get these vague, airy, fairy, weird, bizarre, cosmic notions of a God who is an impersonal being, a force in the universe, But then, you know, you get right down to it, then they say, well, I'm Catholic or I'm Christian. Buddy Jesus again. I would like to know how love permeating the universe suddenly congeals itself into a human being and why that even makes sense to anybody. It doesn't. So anyway, we can argue forever with scientists about this, and I have argued. Oh, wow. It's getting old. Anyway, what I want to do today is I want to whip through a dozen rebuttals that these scientists are always giving to me. Like I said, I've talked to a lot of them, and there's always these same arguments that they bounce back at me, and like JT was doing with his presentation, he was giving you a bunch of counter-arguments, these absurd arguments that they make. And they really are silly. So I'm going to go through them one by one, and you'll see. Total nonsense. Now, here's the first argument I always get when I tell them that science and religion are incompatible. They say, well, but some scientists are Christians, right? And you have to agree, they are. But the thing is that they do not use the religion in their science. I would agree 100% that Ken Miller and Francis Collins here are good scientists. They do good work. I respect their work. I appreciate what they have been doing. But that does not justify the fact that they have other wacky beliefs. You know, that Ken Miller, for instance, says quantum indeterminacy explains everything that God does. That somehow God is diddling quanta invisibly. And that's making all the mutations occur that led to us. And all those mutations were intentional. And, of course, Francis Collins wrote a whole book called The Language of God, in which he admits to having an epiphany where he suddenly realized that the Christian God was real because he's walking along on a hike and he sees a waterfall frozen into three streams. Logic fail, okay? Scientists are supposed to be rational about this sort of thing. Seeing triune whatever doesn't mean that God is real. You know, I'm looking over there at the wall, and there's that panel, and there's three squares. Oh, I'm going to fall down on my knees right now. Jesus, oh, no. No, it doesn't work that way. That's not a rational decision to make. So, you know, the bottom line, though, is that their science does not rely on faith or superstition. That's all we care about. So, you know, I'm one of those people who is on record saying I would love to see religion eradicated. I don't really think it will ever happen. And by eradicated, I don't mean I want to go out and shoot Christians. What I mean is I want it in its proper place, which is, okay, yeah, Ken Miller, go to church on Sunday, have a ball. Some of the people in this room will go home and watch football and television, have a ball. It's the same thing. It's something you enjoy doing. Feel free to do that. But don't use it to determine the policy of our government. Don't, in particular... Don't, in particular, use your peculiar beliefs to define how science should operate. Because I really don't want to see science turned into a football match. Okay, so that's one argument. They'll point to these, and it always seems to be these two. They're very popular because they're open about their faith, which is fine. I'm open about my lack of it. They can be open about theirs. But don't use it to justify their science, and don't use my atheism to justify my science. If you shoot these guys down, though, the next thing they'll do is they'll turn around and they'll tell you that, oh, wait, some of the greatest scientists in history have been believers. You can't possibly compare yourself to Isaac Newton or Albert Einstein. They were so much smarter than you. And I would agree. Yes, I am nowhere near on the par of an Einstein or a Newton. And that's fine with me, okay? But you can't, again, use this as an argument to justify religion. Because when you look at Isaac Newton, for instance, Isaac Newton was a crackpot. He believed in all kinds of crazy stuff. He believed in alchemy. He spent the last years of his life writing and writing and writing about Bible prophecy. He's got more stuff written about Bible prophecy than he does about physics. What do you remember him for? Not the Bible prophecy. That's all been trashed. That's all gone. What you remember him for is, oh, yeah, gravitation, laws of motion, optics, calculus, although he did fight with Leibniz about that. But, yeah, that there's there are solid things that endure, that we remember well, that we respect the man for, and there's the other bullshit that we try to forget. And of course, then Einstein, you know, Einstein, they always bring him up, but, you know, Einstein clearly said, I do not believe in a personal God, and I have never denied this, but have expressed it clearly. And yes, if you read his writing, he's got some vague stuff he says about, you know, sort of cliches that he says. But if you look at what he actually says about God, he says, no, I don't believe in that God. So this doesn't work either. The historical scientists don't provide any evidence for religion. They just can't. I should also mention, of course, that people like Newton lived before Darwin. And as we all know, Darwin was the greatest scientist of them all. I'm going to get beat up by physicists afterwards, but okay, Darwin was the greatest scientist of them all, and he was an unbeliever. So, case settled, right? I can just trot out Darwin, I'm done. If you shoot these down, though, then the next argument they come up is very predictable. It's the dirty word of scientism. We are accused of scientism. Scientism is this idea that science is the only reliable guide to truth. That there's nothing in the world but science. And you know, the sad thing is, I really kind of feel that's true. So maybe there's a little bit of scientism lurking in my head, and I'm proud of it. But you know, at the same time, I'm willing to admit the shortcomings of science. Science does not explain everything. Some things are too complex to be explained by a simple scientific equation. Some things have so many variables, so many impinging phenomena that influence them that you can't simply predict them. And I say, okay, at that point, no, you can't use science to predict that. You can't use science to predict the outcome of football games, although you might get close, right? So, you know, in some ways, I'm a scientismist. If that's a word. Sometimes, some ways I'm not. But the key thing I want to mention is when people accuse us of this, what is their alternative? You know, if you're going to tell me that you can't respect my views on science because I am too deeply involved, too appreciative, too engrossed in science to have some objectivity and be able to stand back and say, well, when you write a poem, you're not actually following a mathematical formula. Which is true. If you can't do that, then you know the thing is that when you look at what religion has to offer, it has nothing equivalent. What is the religious explanation for everything? God did it. It's not a very powerful explanation. Scientific explanations have some potency to them. Religious explanations don't. So yeah, show me an alternative. Show me an alternative to thinking scientifically about the world, and I'll consider it. Okay, now, you know, after I've just confessed to being a bit fond of scientism, although, of course, rejecting the extremes of it, the next thing I'll hear from them is, oh, this is so predictable. I so want to punch people who say this. They say, science can't explain love. Right? So that's me and my wife. We've been married for 32 years now. I think I'm a little bit qualified to talk about love. And, you know, one approach I can say, okay, well, yes, science does explain love. Those of you in the know out there are looking at that and you're saying, oh, yeah, the Goldman equation. The Goldman equation, that's explaining the flux of ions across a membrane in nervous tissue. So, yeah, that explains everything. Of course, in the other sense, it doesn't, because there's, you know, that's a fairly trivial phenomenon to explain, and love is a little bit more complicated than that. And I think my wife would have a better answer for that, and that is this: that we all know this. Love is real. Love is not supernatural. Love does not involve ghosts or gods or angels. It involves real people. Which puts it squarely in my domain, the scientific domain, right? We are the people who deal with the natural world. Love is natural. So let's just take it off the table, the religious table. It does not belong on the religious table at all. Gods have nothing to explain about this. Okay, so here we are. We're tussling with a scientist, and he's still arguing with me, of course. The next thing they're going to tell me is, as I mentioned earlier, there's this sort of abstraction that they will go through. You start off with Jesus, and they start moving away because Jesus is silly. Moving away from Jesus, they're getting more and more wilder and more cosmic. And what they will eventually say is, okay, God is the sum total of all the laws of the universe, so all scientists are religious, all scientists actually worship God. Huh, yeah. Of course, this same scientist will later go off to church and worship Jesus. But when he's in a debate with you, he will argue that, we just worship the laws of the universe. We're all just ultimately pantheists. And Jehovah, there is Jehovah. He's the galaxy. They always point to Hubble Space Telescope pictures when they say this. I like biology, so I'd say, look at all those cells. That must be God. But of course, the truth is stranger than that. This is God. Why not? Yeah, if you're just going to say God is the sum total of all the forces of the universe, I think the vampire squid is a perfect exemplar of all the forces of the universe. And of course, now we're going to sit down and say some laws. And he's scary, so you will believe him. Even his heaven looks like hell. It's great. But of course, the reply to this, though, is you've just accused me of scientism. Isn't this religionism? Isn't it just sort of saying, it's giving up the struggle and saying, oh, the answer is always in religion. Religion explains everything. All forces are explained by gods and deities. So I give up on that, too. And then, like I mentioned before, this religious explanations have no potency at all. They don't help me understand how the world works. Now, the other explanation they make, it's kind of the opposite of this one. On one hand, they'll say, God is everything. God is all these forces. God is Maxwell's equation. Okay, it's whatever. On the other hand, this is the other approach they'll take. No, God's works are cunningly undetectable to science. This is Ken Miller's quantum indeterminacy, saying, the science is working, but there's all these phenomena that we can't see. He's lurking in those gaps. He's lurking in those chance events. Those aren't really chance events. God rigs the dice and makes them go in particular ways that he wants. And one of the hallmarks of this is that many of the major religions have adopted this. They love this. The Catholic Church loves this approach. Some of you may know that the Catholic Church says that they're fine with evolution. Did you know this? Yeah. They say this. They say, yes, we have no quarrel with evolutionary theory. Keep it, teach it in the schools, and they actually do teach it in the school. But they have a reservation. They say, except for one little thing. Okay. There was an Adam and Eve, they say. Catholic Church is very specific about this. Many Protestant sects are very specific about this as well. That, okay, we're willing to admit that apes evolved into people, but they evolved into Adam and Eve. You have to accept this. And then the other thing they insist on is that when Adam and Eve appeared, God zipped in. And he endowed them with a soul. Okay? So these are two primary requirements of accepting evolution if you are a Catholic, is you still have to believe in Adam and Eve, and you have to believe in ensoulment. Whatever that soul thing is, souls undefinable, unmeasurable. Souls are not preserved in the fossil record. Have you noticed? They say, okay, there was a magic moment when this had to have happened. The couple of things that I say about this are first of all, okay, how do you know, old man? See, omniscient rabbit at the bottom who knows this. If these things are cunningly undetectable, if you cannot see them, how did you see them? How are you reporting these things to me? Where's your evidence for this sort of thing? And of course, they just know it. God told them or whatever. The other thing I always say is this, and this rankles some people, they get very annoyed with me, the people who like to say that science and religion are incompatible, is that these people are actually creationists. If you are a theistic evolutionist, if you believe in God bending the universe, I'm sorry, you are a creationist just like the people at the Discovery Institute. Because that's what you're saying, is you're saying that there's this unknowable, mysterious component, this supernatural element that interfered in evolution. You are not willing to accept the major mechanisms of evolutionary theory. Evolution is not about describing a sequence of events. It's not listing species one after the other and saying, well, this is the chain that happened. No, evolution is about the mechanisms that drive it. Natural selection, drift, founder effect, all these processes that go on. Every single scientific process used to describe the progress of evolution is godless. It has no teleological element at all to it. So when you subvert evolution by claiming a teleological agent working on it, you're actually rejecting the fundamental science of biology. So they're all creationists. Okay, here's another thing that they all then say. Okay, they will say that this is not really a good argument for the compatibility of science and religion. It's a surrender to inevitability. They say religion is a natural part of the human mind. That people will just naturally start worshiping things if you don't instruct them otherwise. Which is really peculiar. This is a scene from Jesus' camp. You've seen this? If that were true, why do you have to send the kids to camp? Why do you have to ship them off there and teach them to do this and yell at the sky and praise Jesus and George Bush? You know, you would think if you just take children and put them in a closed room all by themselves, they would naturally and spontaneously start worshiping cardboard cutouts of George Bush. If this were true. The religious people even know this. You know, there's that Jesuit phrase, you know, give me the child for 7 years and I will give you the man. They know this. That what you have to do to indoctrinate kids with these beliefs is you have to teach them to them. It's not natural. It's not spontaneous. It doesn't simply emerge. And what I say to this, of course, is, yeah, ditto. Please, give me your kids for 7 years. They'll come out like me, right? This is true. Of course, with one reservation, she might be a woman. So these are... You know, I argue deeply with them because I don't think religion is a natural part of the human mind. I think religion is an artificial construct that's imposed on the human mind by certain patterns of our culture. And that what we're seeing more and more as we look at people is that there are lots of people who don't accept this. Sometimes some of us can even get past it without having to be steered away from it. For instance, myself, I was brought up in a religious household. I went to church. And after talking with many religious people, some of whom are here who were formerly religious, I realized that I was never religious. I never really believed. I was brought into church and told I was supposed to believe these things, but I did not accept them. And somehow I don't think I'm an X-Man, okay? This is not a mutant superpower. All of us here have this power to escape religion. Some of us it was easier than for others, depending on the depth of your propaganda and indoctrination that you face. But it's all possible. And if you don't raise your children in a religious household, I expect Dale McGowan will be talking about some of this tomorrow, it's fairly easy. My kids are not religious. I've told them all along if they wanted to go to church, sure, go off. But they grew up and they just, I think they all saw the silliness, the absurdity of faith and rejected it. Now another argument that you'll hear, it's related to this one, is this idea religion will never go away, so you have to accept it. I have heard that, so, you know, it's this futility of effort they're making. They're saying, don't bother trying because you can't succeed. Yeah, we can't end wars, so go fight them. You know, we can't end disease, so go ahead and die. it's a totally pointless sort of exercise. And religion is something that we can defeat, that we are seeing defeated. This is a graph of religiosity in the United States over the last, what is it, oh, some 60-some years. And what you can see is that there's a trend. Now, in case there are any Christians here in the audience, I'll help you. The line for religion is going down. The line for atheism, free thought, the nuns is going up. The trends are all the right way for our perspective. This is what we expect. Now, admittedly, we're down there kind of low. But, you know, I really don't think that those 10%, 12% down there at the bottom of the graph are the rise of the new mutants. That these are not strange people. You know, it's people like you, and you're normal, right? Mostly? Healthy, well-adapted, well-socialized, constructive, productive people in our society. So this isn't like we're seeing the emergence of an underclass of evil, tyrannical, whatever. It's just people. And we can keep these lines going until they meet. And, you know, in some places, they're pretty far along. If you look at religion in Britain, this is the result of the British Social Attitude Survey. Some of you may have seen that Richard Dawkins Foundation funded a source by Ipsos Mori a while back, came up with the same result. When you look in the United Kingdom, what you find is about half the people there have rejected religion altogether. Half. Man, it sounds like paradise. Let's get there. That's what we want. Furthermore, when you look at these people, when you look at their religious beliefs and you break them down in some detail, as Dawkins did, you know, he asked more detailed questions. He asked the people who said that they were Christians whether they believed in Jesus Christ, and only like 15-20% said yes. Whoa, okay, let's think about, what does this mean to be religious anymore? It's possible that we will be evolving as a culture towards a kind of religious belief that isn't what we would really call religion anymore. It's a social structure, but it doesn't have those beliefs in the supernatural anymore. And then, of course, I will sit down and stop complaining about them. That's all they got to do. Jettison that religious stuff. Now, of course, that's the direction we're going. What some people will also say is, okay, yeah, maybe we're going in that direction. You know, maybe atheists aren't totally evil. But here's the thing. If you look at our evolutionary history, you know, the evolutionary psychology crowd, they'll say, oh, but religion was formative, is important in creating us. And they'll say, without religion, we'd still be living in the Stone Age, right? That this was an important factor in increasing our health and prosperity and creating civilization. Okay, I have a couple arguments against that. You know, that what came along with religion, it seems, was a lot of bad things. You just have to look at the Aztec culture, for instance. Why should we think that a good thing is a religion that chops the hearts out of people? Why should we believe that a religion that creates a priestly class that doesn't really contribute to the society, except perhaps in this kind of cohesive binding sort of way, is a good thing for society? So that's one argument. We could argue, wouldn't the world have been a much better place, even in the Middle Ages, even in the ancient world, if we hadn't had this dedication to a faith? And I think actually, if you look at many of the ancient civilizations, you know, they sort of treated religion as a formality, and so it was okay. But the other argument, of course, is that if we'd still be living in the Stone Age, why do we have people claiming that the Stone Age was 6,000 years ago? Why do we have people claiming that humans and dinosaurs lived together? That sounds like this, that's Stone Age thinking right there. This is actually from a children's book published by Ken Ham, of course, the creationist, illustrating what life was like thousands of years ago. And what you may notice if you look very carefully there is those dinosaurs have really sharp, razor-sharp teeth. And what they were for was eating fruit and leaves. This is their version of history. I think that's Fred and Wilma there. And of course, that guy, you know, notice the gorilla with the razor sharp teeth? Was that kind of, that's not what gorilla dentition looks like. Anyway, there he is gnawing on a stick. I think that's Ken, really, I do. Just makes no sense at all. Okay, so, you know, there is something of an argument to be made that maybe religion played a significant role in shaping civilization in a positive way. I think it's definite that it shaped civilization in some way. You could argue whether it was positive or negative. When you point that out, though, that there are many negative consequences of religion, the next thing you'll hear is this: science does evil things. Yes. Isn't it awesome? I want a death ray. I really do. So, yeah, we've got all these radical sorts of things that we've come up with. That things like the sexual revolution, wait a minute, what's so bad about that? That's a good thing. But I think you would agree that the sexual revolution changed the culture. And that's often what these people are upset about, is change. They dislike change altogether. So they say, okay, well, there's all these horrible things that science does. Science is the bugaboo that does all the horrible, horrible discoveries that kill people and destroy the world and allow them to have sex freely, you know, those unforgivable things. But, you know, I'd also point out that science does all these other things. You know, some of you who have seen The Life of Brian may recognize the initial parts of it, but we could keep going forever listing all the positive benefits of science. Science enables some evil things to do. Yes, we build death rays, but at the same time, we also build modern medicine. And I don't know. I haven't had much of a problem with death rays, but health problems, yeah, we all have those. I'd rather see us confronting those. Okay, so what this really, though, is that it's an unfortunate side effect of the fact that religion doesn't work and science does. And we don't want to change that. Okay, another argument you often get is this one. Other ideologies besides religion also make people do stupid things. This is a logical fallacy. I'm not arguing about those things. I'm not saying that communism, it's always communism, okay. I'm not saying that communism didn't do bad things or didn't do things in the wrong way or didn't lead people down the wrong path. I'm not arguing that at all, although I think communism also got some things right. Oh boy, another lynching after... Anyway, there's all these different ideas out there, and refuting and saying that those are bad does not make your belief good. As JT would say, stay on target, right? This is drifting off target. The target is your religion a force for good? Not, is communism a force for good or a force for evil? And of course, though, that doesn't matter because they're theists. You know, they've never heard of this fallacy. They wouldn't be theists if they'd never heard of this fallacy. Okay, let me do one more, and then we'll wrap it up here. Another issue that comes up is this one. This one we hear a lot lately, and that is that scientists lack an objective morality. That yes, you can be a scientist, sure, but you will not do good with it. That you'll do evil things because you don't have an objective God standing above you telling you what's right and wrong. Of course, this one is easily dealt with because, no, I don't, and neither do you. There is no God whispering in your ear. That's your own id sort of urging you to wish fulfillment. And I just say, okay, but I derive my morality from humanist principles. I believe in a secular morality, which Matt Dillahunty will tell you about later today, that we don't use science to define morality. We have other clues to do that, like our interactions with other human beings. Science says what is, not what ought to be. Science can say some pretty horrible things, and then it's up for us as human beings to make decisions about how to implement those. And those require a morality that's built on our trust in our fellow people, not in an invisible sky fairy. Also, of course, you can take this one, you can just turn it around. Oh, you say religion is your source of morality. Well, Bride of Frankenstein says, what about misogyny, witch burnings, crusades, pogroms, pedophile priests, gay hatred? You don't get to talk to me about morality. If you are religious, you are out of this argument. So, why not just stick with science? Science is good. Science is useful. We can use humanism, we can use secular causes to define morality, and we make a healthy, productive society that isn't sidetracked into all kinds of delusions about ghosts and fairies and supernatural agents in the sky. Now, the bottom line, of course, is this one. Science is godless. I would love to hear from a scientist who has a different argument, please. I've just talked about 12 that I reject out of hand. If you've got a better argument, come talk to me, because I would be interested in hearing about it, and then I get to add another slide to this presentation as I rip it apart. Okay, so I guess my time is up. I will stop there. Thank you very much. Questions? Oh, okay, sure.
So we have a little bit of time for questions if you want to line up in this row.
My question is on the morality that is ought, whether science has any place to speak in morality. My question to you is, as a scientist, what do you think of Sam Harris's new book on the moral landscape, on well-being, and whether science has a voice in ethics?
Yeah, I knew that was going to come up. I kind of disagree with Sam Harris. I don't think it does. I think you can use science to define what is efficient, what works towards a specific goal. You know, and if for instance, if your specific goal is we want to maximize the number of happy, healthy people on planet Earth, then you can say, okay, well, now we have to use science to figure out how to do that. But setting that goal is not determined by science. That's determined by human values. So, you know, I would say, well, but maybe my goal is to be the supreme overlord of the universe and have you all slaving away as peons in my service. And then I can say, well, science, that will help me accomplish this end. So yeah, I actually think that science is neutral on those issues. It just tells you the best way to accomplish your goals.
Like many former theists, there wasn't like a set moment when I stopped believing. It was more like a slow process of one belief after another being contradicted. So do you think there's any role for books like Stephen Hawking's A Briefer History of Time, which is a bridge version of his longer book, that could kind of counter the people who reject science out of hand? Like, it could give them like a stepping stone into actually accepting science at all?
Oh, well, is Stephen Hawking the best one? Because he's pretty out there. He's pretty strong in saying, no, there's no God. There's no reason to believe in it. So I don't see him as a stepping stone to that at all for religious people. But I do think knowledge is that in general, that learning and awareness about the world around you is the best strategy for defeating religion. Because you pretty quickly learn that, as JT was saying, you know, when you walk up that ledge and you say, I'm going to convince myself to jump off, you can't do that. Because you know that there's an experienced reality that tells you that, no, that doesn't work. There is no reality that says that prayers work. So that's, yeah, so more science. That's what I always say.